All right, so I want to welcome everyone to our all-digital How to Manage a Small Law Firm coaching call. My name is Scott Whitaker, and I'll be your host. R. John Robbins is on the line with us. It's going to be a great call today. You know, one of the things we say every time we start these calls is that you should treat this call as if you're meeting with a potential new client. So you wouldn't be checking email. You wouldn't be checking Facebook. You wouldn't be surfing the Internet if you were meeting with a potential new client. So take this time and set it aside, and let's go to work on your law firm so that we can help you help more people and get more clients. So having said that, R. John, are you ready to get started?
I am.
All right. So today's focus really is going to be on how to become enslaved by your law firm and really how to break free from it. And so I've got a number of little points here that I'm going to ask R. John to just touch on, and he'll share with you why lawyers are enslaving themselves by doing that, and then what you can do to break free and be different. So, R. John, we'll start out with this one. It should be a relatively easy one, but one of the ways that lawyers become enslaved by their law firm is underpricing your firm services. So share more with us about that.
Sure. Well, there is a concept called cost of goods sold. If you go to a restaurant, any successful restaurant, years ago we actually did one of our live quarterly meetings, we had the executive chef of the hotel come and do a presentation for everyone, and he brought a plate of food, and he took us through and showed us what is called in the restaurant business the plate cost, the cost of putting that plate of food in front of a customer. And he explained to us, it was some sort of seafood dish, I don't remember. And he explained to us that the cost of the protein was $1.50, and the cost of the starch was 75 cents, and the cost of the vegetables was 50 cents. And I don't remember what the dish was, but I remember it had pistachios on it. And he said, the pistachios are plus or minus a nickel. Add the pistachios, it costs a nickel, take the pistachios off, it's one nickel left in cost of goods sold to put the plate in front of the customer. So then they know what they want their profit to be, they know what they want the profit of the restaurant to be, and they simply take the cost of the food, the plate cost, multiply it by their profit margin, and that is the strategic way of arriving at the price for the services. So when it comes to pricing legal services to your law firm, there's basically three approaches. There's the approach that most lawyers take, and most lawyers who take this approach don't get burned too badly simply because legal services are so damn profitable. I mean, legal services are so profitable that you can actually do this blindfolded and usually come out pretty much okay by just going with the market rate. And that's basically you look around and you say everyone else is charging $300 an hour, so I'll charge $300 an hour because everyone else is charging $300 an hour. That's why I charge $300 an hour. And you just price your services at the market rate. That is the worst way to price your legal services and causes you to become a slave to your law firm, or really more specifically, causes you to become a slave to the market. Because if the only way you think to price your services is based on what everyone else is charging, then and no one else raises their prices, then you don't raise your prices. But of course, your secretary needs to get a raise, and the cost of gasoline goes up, and the cost of insurance goes up, and the rent goes up, and cost of your kids' tuition goes up, and everything in life goes up. But because the market won't move on the price, on account of the fact that the market won't move on the price, on account of the fact that the market isn't moving on the price, you now become a slave, not exactly to your law firm, but you become a slave to all the lawyers around you. Scott? Scott, are you there? Am I here? Can you still hear me? Scott, can you hear me?
Hey, I lost my signal there.
Okay, well, now you're back.
I'm back now. I had to call in from a different line, so I apologize for that.
Well, I gave a great answer, and you can go back and listen to the recording because it was really good.
All right, I'll have to do that. All right, so the other one, I'm going to put these three together, and it's blame others for your problems, blame the economy, or blame the clients. So how do solo lawyers end up falling into this pitfall and becoming enslaved, and then what can they do to break free?
Well, it's not just solo lawyers. It's every adult. Solo lawyers are presumably adults, and pretty much, you know, anytime you blame another person for whatever is happening in your life, and this is the part, of course, where people get all pissed off and bent out of shape and hang up the phone and cancel their membership and run away crying. But that doesn't change the fact that what I'm saying is exactly 100% true. Anytime you blame someone else for anything that's going on in your life, and I would include what's going on in your business, you are giving that person control. You're giving away your power. 100% responsibility equals 100% control. 100% control comes from 100% responsibility. For every ounce of responsibility you give away with blame, you give away an ounce of control. Well, you know, if your fate is dependent on my conduct, then you are my slave, right? But if your fate is dependent on your conduct and your choices and the choices you make and the decisions you make and the actions you take, and you take responsibility for everything in your life, well, then you can never be enslaved by anyone, because you take full responsibility. And if you choose to remain in a predicament or a situation that is untenable to you, well, that's your choice, because you can always leave. So anything to do with blame leads to you becoming enslaved by your law firm.
All right, and let's go back over to getting paid here. Another one is don't ask for retainers. Now, why do some not ask for retainers? And the obvious solution to that is start asking. So let me tee it off to you.
So if you want to become enslaved by your law firm, don't ask for retainers. That's kind of the construct of the question.
Yes.
Well, first of all, you become a slave when you don't ask for a retainer. You are essentially, you've got more skin in the game than the client does, right? Because you have, as we mentioned earlier, with plate cost and cost of goods sold, you do have a cost of goods sold. There is a cost for delivering the services that your firm provides. Some of those costs are going to be hard costs, things you actually have to write a check for, be it court fees or filing fees or paying a secretary to work for, you know, to work on a file, you have to pay the secretary. The secretary isn't working for free. If your office cost you, I'm just going to make this up, if your office cost you $100 a month, which it doesn't, and you work 10% of your month on a particular client's case, well, then you should allocate 10% of that rent to that client's case, which means you just paid $10 to rent office space to work on that client's case. And that's a real cost of goods sold. And people who run highly profitable law firms, you know, pay attention to these numbers. And I'm not going to suggest that, well, we all know it to the penny, because we don't. But we pay attention to these numbers, and we're aware of the impact and the effect that these numbers have on our business. When you don't ask for a retainer, or more specifically, when you don't require a retainer before you begin working, you're basically extending credit, and you're extending, you know, an interest-free, uncollateralized loan to someone who 9 times out of 10, by virtue of the fact that they're asking you for help in the first place, is probably demonstrating to you that they're not creditworthy. And then, of course, you have to work to their satisfaction before they will
choose at their convenience to bestow payment upon you, and then you just become a slave to the business. You're asking me why people don't do that? Why do lawyers do that to themselves every single day?
Yes.
Fear, insecurity, ego. Fear, insecurity, ego is always behind the decision not to ask for and require a retainer up front. I don't think it's stupidity. Lawyers are smart. It's fear, ego, and insecurity. Maybe some stupidity. Maybe there's some stupid lawyers who just don't know any better. But I think everyone knows better.
All right, here's another one. Go to bar functions and commiserate with unsuccessful lawyers, or go to bar functions and commiserate with unhappy lawyers.
You know, there was a study done, and it's been quoted and cited so many times, I don't think anyone really remembers where it originated from, and it could even be urban myth, and there was never a study done. But I think we all intuitively understand that there's a lot of truth to this often quoted thing, that your income or your net worth is going to be the average of the five people you spend the most time around. And there's nothing magic to that. There's a very practical reason why that tends to happen. And it's because we all have to agree on certain rules to get along, right? So, you know, when you and I go out for dinner, we agree that going out for dinner means we go to a restaurant and not a hot dog cart. And when you and I go out for dinner, we agree that it means sitting down at a table, not sitting at a, lunch counter. And when you and I go out for dinner, we agree, you know, on certain table manners, and we agree on certain customs, and we agree on certain understandings of how things work. True?
Yes.
Okay. If we didn't agree on these things, we wouldn't be able to go out for dinner on a regular basis, because we just would have such a completely different set of expectations, understandings, and standards. And so what happens is, when you hang around with someone who is broke, and you hang around with someone who's having all kinds of problems with their business, and they're just commiserating and they're bitching and complaining, but they're not really taking real meaningful action to do something about it, it puts you in a difficult position. Because you either have to agree with the other person about their stories and their excuses and their explanations for why their business is doing so badly, and yeah, you're right, the economy is bad. Yeah, you're right, the economy, the clients don't pay. Yeah, you're right, law schools are graduating too many people from law school. Yeah, you're right, LegalZoom is killing all of us. Yeah, you're right, you know, the only lawyers who are making any money are the ones who are screwing over their clients. Yeah, you're right, you know, those guys who are working, you know, who are driving nice cars and living in nice houses and making a great living from their law firm, they're just killing themselves to do it. Yeah, you either have to agree with all their stories, or you have to call bullshit, or you don't go back. Those are really kind of your three choices, right? There's a great song by They Might Be Giants called You and Your Racist Friend. And it's a story about a guy who is at a party, and he's like, I just can't tolerate being there with you and your racist friend. I don't understand how you can stand around and not call him on his bullshit. You either have to call him on his bullshit, punch him in the face, leave, or if you stay there and don't call him on his bullshit, it means you must agree with him on some level. And that's sort of what happens when you're hanging around with a bunch of people who are whining and complaining about all these problems. You're either calling them on their bullshit, in which case they probably don't invite you back, or you're not being around them, in which case that solves part of the problem. Does that answer your question?
You've got the clearest
answer, but I think I got the point across, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is one of the great benefits of when people come to our live quarterly meetings, and they come to our workshops, and they're around hundreds of lawyers whose law firms are just growing and growing and more profitable and less hours and everything's better. And it's like, wait a second, I can either go back to my local bar association with all of my loser lawyer friends and agree with them on all the reasons why everything sucks, or I can hang around with this group of, you know, going on 400 solo small law firm owners who have these successful, fast-growing, everything's getting better and better all the time law firms. Which world do I want to live in? And, you know, and that's part of the secret sauce of why our members have so much success.
Right. Next one is, don't use client grading.
It's just like school, A, B, C, D, and F. I have a clear definition of what I consider an A member of how to manage a small law firm to be. I take one or two of those qualities or characteristics away, and they become a B, like boy, member. And I take one or two of those qualities and characteristics away, and they become a C. And then take a few more, they become a D. Take a couple more, they become an F. If you don't do this, then you will always be a slave to your law firm, because even if you yourself can intuitively, you know, like pornography, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it, right? Even if it's like I can't define what an A or B or C or D or F client is, but I know it when I see it. Well, that's okay as long as you're by yourself. But the minute you try to hire someone to help you with marketing, the minute you try to help someone get hire someone to help you with sales, the minute you try to hire an associate, the minute you start hiring people to help you to get some freedom from the day-to-day in any part of your business, if that person is not empowered with a clear criteria and a clear definition of A, B, C, D, and F, you're setting that person up for failure right from the jump. And so what most lawyers end up doing is not hiring anyone to help them with anything because they know that these people are not going to be able to distinguish, you know, if you can't define for a marketing consultant or a marketing SEO person or a person who's going to shoot a video for you or a person who's going to write blog copy for you or do a newsletter for you, anyone who is presuming to say that they will, for a fee, do something that will bring prospective new clients to your door, if that person does not begin by insisting upon having a clear definition of an A, B, C, D, or F client. They don't have to use that term, obviously. But if they don't begin the relationship by saying, you need to tell me in as clear as term possible what we're looking for and what we're looking to avoid, you know, let me just tell you a little tip here. Run away. That's not a good person to be working with.
So just to go deeper a little bit on this one, because I would imagine many of the people on the call haven't graded in depth that way, suggesting literally write down client, best client ever, client A, and have a list of characteristics followed up maybe even by a list of questions by which you're able to ask that potential new client to get to, is this an A client? Is that sort of the process that you're talking through here?
I'm holding in my hand a statement of values, philosophies, and standards that we have with how to manage small law firm. And I'm flipping to the page where we define an A member. Give me a minute. If anyone would like to get a copy of this for free, you can send an email to, who should they send that email to? arjohn@howtomanage.com.
Yeah, and you can send it there or just reply to my email that I sent you earlier, and I'll make sure you get it as well.
Yeah, and we'll send you a hard copy, not even email. Here's one. Here it is. Firm policy. This is on page 43 of the handbook. Firm policy, number one. No assholes. Yes, you read that right. We have a grading scale we use to define an A client or member. These are the sort of people we love to work with, the sort of people who inspire me and my team to go above and beyond on a regular basis. We also have our idea of what an F client or member is. These are the sort of people that the A members don't want to be around
and neither do we. There are two approaches to creating your own grading scale. One is to build up from F to A. The other is to define what's an A, and then as you remove certain positive qualities, characteristics, and behaviors, you likewise demote the person until their conduct lands them on suspension and then eventually out of business with you. We enforce this policy to protect you and me and my team. So here's what it means to be an A member in How to Manage a Small Law Firm, in no particular order. We like working with you. You like working with us. You are highly motivated to have a successful law firm and all the benefits that flow from it. You have tangible and objectively quantifiable goals that really excite you. You respect my staff and appreciate my staff for the very challenging work they do, servicing and keeping hundreds of lawyers happy from all around the world. You respond to the mistakes that we make in our business with the same grace and maturity that you would hope your own clients would demonstrate when you make a mistake in your business. You believe that the best investment you can make is an investment in yourself. You cooperate with, support, and at the very least, seek to understand the reasons for our policies. You are collaborative and intellectually generous with your fellow members. You have a good sense of humor, not easily offended by liberal use of the F word, especially when it's so richly called for in an explanation. You think it's really cool that my dog often works from my office with me, and that I often work from remote and sometimes strange places where there may be an occasional odd sound going on in the background. You do the work required to translate the lessons, tools, insights, ideas, templates, and instructions we provide into tangible results in your life and business. You are honest with us. You are honest with yourself. You remain current on your financial obligations to us and otherwise follow the rules we have established and which are designed to help all of our members get the best results possible. You look for lessons, not problems, in every situation. There's always a lesson. Sometimes we make it obvious. Sometimes you get to find it for yourself. You are positive prosperity. You are a positive person with a prosperity-based outlook on life. No whiners, no crybabies allowed. That's our definition of an A member of How to Manage a Small Law Firm. And you know what? Every year when we sign someone up to come to our Discovery Day, which remember, the Discovery Day is free. You put up a $1,000, 100% refundable deposit, but it doesn't cost anything to come to the Discovery Day. And we send out a FedEx package with a whole bunch of stuff, including this whole handbook, and this policy is in there. And every once in a while, we'll get someone who they will not, no one has ever come out and said, I'm an asshole. I don't qualify as an A member, but you can kind of tell that that really put them off, that policy, that definition. And, you know, they'll ask, they'll say, do I have to come to the Discovery Day to get my deposit back? And the answer, of course, is no. You don't have to come to the Discovery Day to get your deposit back. And so they'll say, why don't you give me my deposit back, and I'm not going to come. Okay. Good luck with your life. Here's your deposit back. The policy did its job.
It attracts those you want to work with, repels those you don't want to work with.
And makes it very clear for everyone on my staff. Now, if someone on my staff, you know, I've got 40-plus people on my staff now, full-time W-2 employees. Some of them I've known for a long time, and I know them really well, and they know me really well. They've been with me since the beginning. And others I don't know very well, and really they don't know me very well. But this gives them protection. It gives them a vocabulary they can use. If they're having a negative experience with a member in any situation, they can come to their supervisor or their team leader or ultimately end up with me, and this gives them a way to articulate the problem they're having. They'll say, you know, I'm having a problem with this member because I'm just looking at one of these things, they're really not very collaborative. They're not very intellectually generous with the group. Every time we have a meeting, they're always taking, 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 and they're never giving anything back. And I'm not saying that off of that I just say, okay, you're right, they're out. No, but it gives us a vocabulary. It gives us a basis to have a conversation with the person on my team, and then it gives us a basis to go back to the member, him or herself, and say, hey, you know, we're having some concerns that maybe, you know, you're not contributing as much as you're getting from your fellow members when you get together in groups. And, you know, most of the time when we've had to bring that to someone's attention, they're usually completely unaware of it. They're like, oh, I never really thought of it that way. You're right. Maybe I was a little bit nervous. But it gets us into a conversation, and we can focus on the issue and not make it a big thing about their personality or the person.
Good. The next one. Avoid topics. It would be closely related to this because it might be some conversations here, but avoid topics that may cause clients to be uncomfortable.
That's a great way to turn yourself into a slave in your law firm, is to avoid topics that may cause, or even if you know it's going to cause, the client to be uncomfortable. You know, you didn't introduce him to her who now wants to get a divorce. You didn't introduce them to or discourage them from seeing a financial planner, and that's why they're now having to file bankruptcy. You didn't offer them that extra drink before getting in the car and sending them on the road, and now they need a criminal defense attorney. You didn't, you get where I'm coming from. You didn't cause their problem. You are in a position to potentially help them solve their problem. But, you know, we're not in the business of selling ice cream cones. We're not in the business of selling sunshine and roses. We are in the business of helping real people solve important problems in their lives and in their businesses. And very rarely are those important problems unaccompanied by difficult issues and difficult questions and uncomfortable conversations. So the lawyer who is trying to get all of his or her clients to like him. Oh, I want all my clients to like me. I can't stand it if they don't like me. I wouldn't want them to be uncomfortable. Well, how are you going to have a conversation with someone about their estate plan, a meaningful conversation to really help someone make important decisions about their plans with regard to their estate plan without talking about some uncomfortable topics? How are you going to help someone have a real meaningful conversation about their plans around their divorce without, you know, engaging in some difficult discussions? You know, how are you going to help someone find the clarity? Find the clarity to prioritize their choices so that they give you the money that you need in order to save their life rather than giving the money to, you know, to buy a big screen TV or take a vacation or, you know, something that's not really going to make a big difference in their life. How are you going to ever help someone make really meaningful choices in their life if you're more concerned about them liking you and you're afraid of bringing up anything that's uncomfortable? You become a slave to your firm. More specifically, you become a slave to the client, and you essentially end up becoming their enabler because they start telling you how to represent them instead of you knowing best. You're the professional. They are not.
About taking your work home with you.
Well, I mean, that's pretty obvious. You take your work home with you, you become a slave to your law firm because you're just working all the time. I have an office at home, but my office at home has a door. And when I'm not using it, the door is closed and I'm not in it.
I'll tie one close to it. Do not create delegable systems, checklists, or processes.
Well, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If you don't define what an A client is, you can't really delegate any marketing tasks. You can't really hire anyone to meet with prospective clients to decide whether or not to accept an engagement from them. You're going to have a very difficult time hiring an associate and delegating a case to that associate if you don't have a clear definition of an A, B, C, D, or F client. And similarly, if you don't systematize, if you don't create a system for how you want files to be opened, for example, well, then you can't really delegate how files are supposed to be opened, and you end up having to be the one who opens up all the files, notwithstanding the fact that, you know, a good secretary can open up a file. You don't have to go to law school to open up a file if you have a good system that you can follow to open up a file. But if you don't create that system, then you end up having to do everything yourself because you're the only one who can read your own mind, and you become a slave to your firm pretty soon. And then what's worse, more business, which everyone wakes up is like, I want to grow my law firm. I want more clients. Well, more clients just ends up being more enslavement if you're the one who has to do everything because you won't or don't know how to and won't learn how to create systems. Or if you have learned, won't make it a priority and set some time aside every month to build one system per month. In a year, you'll have 10 systems built. And that'll be 10 times better than how it is now. Are we going to do Q&A this month?
Yeah, we are. I've got just two more left, and then we're going to go to Q&A. The second to the last one I've got is deceive yourself as to how you really want to be living so that your goals can never inspire you.
Man, that is depressing, but so common. You know, the question is, first off, the premise is the law firm is supposed to work for you. You are not supposed to be a slave working for your law firm. The law firm is supposed to be your tool, your vehicle. It's supposed to work for you. And if you want it to work for you, you got to have some goals. You know, how much net income do you want this law firm to generate for you? How many weeks off per year do you want to take? How many of those weeks do you want them to be consecutive weeks in a row instead of just spread out all over the place? You know, what kind of impact do you really want your business to help you make in this world? What kind of dent are you trying to have on this universe? When you set honest goals, and let's just use numbers, let's use money as an example, not because it's the most important, it's just the easiest to quantify. It's the most objective and easiest to quantify. If you determine that to live the way you want to live costs, let's just say, for example, $1 million. You need $1 million before taxes. That's around $600,000 after taxes, around $50,000 a month after taxes, to live the way you want to live. Okay, great. And let's say you build out your business plan and you determine that your law firm will operate at, let's just say, a 25% profit, a total owner benefits, your normalized salary, your profit distributions, all the expenses you'll run through the business, blah, blah, blah. Let's just say, to keep the math easy, that it's 25%. All right. Well, you need $1 million before taxes, and your business is going to run at a 25% profit margin. Well, you can do the math. Everyone can do the math. That means your firm needs to gross $4 million. All right, well, if the firm's going to gross $4 million and your average widget that you're going to sell, your average case, your average matter, your average client, is, let's just say, for argument's sake, $4,000. So I'm taking my calculator. I'm putting $4 million, $4 million, not $40 million, $4 million divided by $4,000 means that the firm has to service 1,000 files. 1,000 files at $4,000 a file is $4 million. 1,000 divided by 12 months is 83 per month. So 83 files per month at an average value of $4,000 a file is 1,000 files a year. That's $4 million in gross revenue. 25% profit margin gives you $1 million before tax income. Now you can build a marketing plan. Now you know whether the sales is on track or not on track. Now you have an idea of how much staff you need or don't need. Now you know how much space that staff needs to sit in. Now you know how many computers the staff needs to work on. Now are you seeing where I'm going here, Scott?
Yep. Yeah.
But if you start off with a lie and you say, I don't need $50,000 a month to live the way I want to live, I can settle for $25,000 a month. $25,000 a month will get me everything that I want. But it's not true. The truth is, you need 50,000. And there's no right or wrong number. I'm just making a point. Well, if you tell me that you really need $25,000 a month to live the way you really want to live, then I'm going to say $25,000 a month to live the way you really want to live at a 25% profit margin means the firm needs to gross $100,000 a month, which means, you see where I'm going with this? We're just going to come up with a completely different model. And since the model is based on a goal that isn't real, it doesn't matter to you. And if it doesn't matter to you, you're not going to ever really break free of all of your excuses and stories and bullshit to make it happen. And pretty soon, you start believing that it's not possible to accomplish even $25,000 because $25,000 didn't inspire you in the first place. And you start becoming slave to the idea that it's not possible to build a highly successful law firm when maybe the problem is you never set a goal that actually mattered to you to begin with.
Last one here, confuse cause and effects.
Oh, well, look, I mean, we live in a universe that operates in a pretty understandable way. Causes lead to effects. Effects don't just show up without there being a cause. If your firm has steady, reliable, predictable cash flow, that is an effect. The cause or causes of that effect have to do with marketing and sales and having a business plan and probably have like a marketing budget and probably having key performance indicators and other measurements that you pay attention to little by little by little by little. So it all adds up to get you to where you want to go. But if you get distracted by the effect, oh my God, I don't have any money. I don't have any cash flow. And so I can't. And what people end up doing is they end up saying, I don't like the effect that I'm experiencing. And therefore, I'm disempowered to do anything about the cause. And as soon as you turn that around and have it all mixed up like that, you basically just become a victim of everything around you. You become a completely disempowered person. Forget about a lawyer and a law firm and a business. You just become a disempowered human being when you start thinking that effects precede causes. Very topsy-turvy, confusing world to live in if you think that causes are independent. I mean, that effects are independent of causes.
Good stuff, man. All right, I want to invite our operator, Stephanie, on the line. Stephanie, if you'll come on the line and give everyone instructions on how to go into our Q&A.
At this time, to enter the question queue, press star 1 only once. If you press it more than once, you will remove yourself from the question queue.
Okay, so if you have a question, press star 1, and your phone line will be isolated with our operator, Stephanie. And Stephanie will bring you on the phone line. You'll be able to ask your question directly to Arjun and be able to get clarification on it. Meanwhile, everybody else will be able to hear your question and learn from your question and Arjun's reply. So if you have a question only once, press star 1 only once, and your phone line will be isolated, and then Stephanie will bring you on the line. We'll give Stephanie just a moment, and Stephanie, when you're ready, you can bring on the first question.
Scott, are people pressing star 1?
Yeah, we're giving Stephanie just a little bit of a moment here. She must be taking some questions in the queue.
We do have a question from Peter. Your line is now open.
Hey, Arjun. We're having a little bit, I'm talking about an effect or a problem of a lot of prospective new clients calling, but, you know, let's just call them too low income level oftentimes, and just thinking of, you know, solutions, how to slightly upscale, you know, our clientele, you know, I'm thinking, I mean, just sort of brainstorms I've had have been, you know, things like, you know, are we screening our potential new clients well enough, you know, so they're not getting attorney time like a staff person? Should we be doing things like paid potential new client meetings? And, you know, also just looking at kind of where our clients coming from, and should sort of the marketing sources be, you know, a different sort of mix? You know, are we getting too much of the, like, Google search and stuff that, you know, might be too many sort of shoppers?
What do you do?
We do divorce and child custody work in Chicago.
I'm just writing this down. Divorce and child custody in Chicago. All right. The effect you're experiencing is what? That prospective clients call your firm, ask the price, you tell them the price, and they say that's too expensive, and they hang up. More or less, that's how it goes.
Yeah, or even they get to the stage of where they're doing a prospective call or a prospective, you know, in-person meeting with an attorney, and you know, basically wasting our time oftentimes. You know, just due to inability to pay and no chance they're a prospective client.
Well, first of all, I would suggest you stop thinking that it's a waste of your time to help give someone information, education, and clarity.
Okay.
I'm not saying that to give you a hard time.
No.
I'm just saying that attitude can't not seep into everything you're doing with your prospective clients. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the prospective client called the office. They schedule an appointment. They show up for the appointment, and you eventually get to the point where you tell them the price, and they say that's too expensive, and then they leave.
Too often that is happening, yes.
Okay. What are you doing to pre-qualify or pre-educate the client before they get to that appointment?
Part of it might be a near-term issue of we've had a little staff flux with our sort of the receptionist salesperson, meaning we had a full-time person and then we've had a temp handling the job and now we're about to rehire somebody. So that might be a little bit of a near-term problem.
Do you have a script?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
So when the person quit who was in there for a while, and they were replaced by the temporary person, how did you introduce that person to the script? Did you give that person the script and say, this is the script, follow it?
They have the script. I would take accountability for sort of the idea that, you know, when you're having the temp person and, you know, we're going to have a permanent person filling the role in 2 weeks, I'm probably not giving as much attention or training to the temp that maybe I can or could have. And, going forward,
Why didn't you just tell all of your marketing vendors, listen, turn off the marketing for 2 weeks. We've got no one here who's qualified to speak with prospective new clients. Save yourself the money of having a temp. Catch up on all your legal work. Maybe go on vacation. And then when the permanent person shows up, flip the switch back on, go back into business. Because that would have been less expensive than the approach you took.
Yeah, fair. I mean, understood.
All right, so problem number one, which is leading me to believe I understand what the cause is, you removed any pre-qualifying exercises before people were being scheduled for appointments. Now that might be one of the causes. Next question.
Right.
What is being done to pre-qualify, pre-educate the client, prepare the client or prospective client from the time that they schedule the appointment until they actually show up for the appointment? Take me through that process. I've called your office. I've said whatever I've said. You've booked me for the appointment. First off, absent an emergency, what's the soonest I can ever get in?
Next day.
Okay, so you don't really have a system created that gives you any space to do pre-qualification or pre-conditioning or pre-education, because some people are coming in the next day, some people are coming in 2 days, some people are coming in 3 days. There isn't really a systematic process that people are going through, I gather from your answer. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, yeah. I mean, in terms of when I would describe us as doing it better, it would simply be better verbal pre-qualifying in that initial call with a staff person who's going into, hey, tell me about where you're living and where you're working, so you're at least ascertaining, you know, let's just call them, you know, basic demographic things, and then you're also giving them a little on, okay, here's where our retainers start, and, you know, oftentimes that'll elicit things about, you know demographics in a neighborhood or a suburb, and you know this person works as X, and then when you say, hey, $1,750 or $2,500, $5,000, and it's like, oh, no, you know, then it's a pretty, that's the only level of pre-qualifying we were doing, I would say, even in, let's just say, the better model that, you know, honestly, yeah, I haven't even been following as well as, you know, I should have been the last month or so just due to some of the staffing stuff.
So
are you
open to some feedback about your quote-unquote better model?
Pardon? Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, that's absolutely, you know, why I'm on the call.
It's not a system. You haven't created a system. You have someone on the phone who asks some more or less random questions about the person's, you know, area code or zip code or neighborhood they live in or the job they have. And based on that, you consult with your crystal ball to determine their ability to pay. And that really short circuits the entire process. So step one, I'm just going to tell you, I mean, I can go through and ask you five more questions and we can just eviscerate your entire system, but I'm not here to make you feel bad or to embarrass you. You've
right.
given me enough information. If you don't mind, I'll just prescribe
Absolutely.
A better solution for you.
That would be great.
Step one, have a script.
Okay.
Actually, before you even get to step one, your marketing should be education-based marketing. Right? So, for example, prospective new members for, you know, when a person contacts my team to schedule an appointment, you can go to howtomanageasmalllawfirm.com/appointment. Everyone on the call can go there to see what it looks like. You're welcome to schedule an appointment if you want to, but go to howtomanageasmalllawfirm.com/appointment. And when you get there, there's, first of all, a video with a bunch of our members talking about what it's like to be a member. So right from the get-go, you kind of have an idea what you're looking into. There should be no big surprises what this is all about. Once you schedule the appointment, you can never get an appointment the same day. You always have to wait a couple of days to get an appointment, not because no one's ever available the next day. Sometimes people are available the next day. Sometimes they're not. But the point is we need to have a systematic, consistent experience for all prospective new members. So when you schedule the appointment, you get a confirmation email, and then you get a video with, you know, answering frequently asked questions. And the frequently asked questions that you get are designed as much to get you to cancel the appointment as they are designed to get you excited about your appointment, because, you know, they answer questions about, you know, a whole bunch of different things that we want or need you to know about. So we don't waste your time having a call with us. Notice the attitude. I don't want to waste your time having a sales call with someone from my team if I can answer some questions for you that you can use to disqualify yourself. I don't have an attitude of, fuck you, I don't want you to waste my time.
Sure.
Completely different attitude. All right. Next, when the prospective client comes into your office, in my case, you know, 99% of the time it's over the phone, prospective new member is, you know, they have a sales call, like a real, actual, consultative sales call. So when someone from your team is meeting with your prospective new clients, how does that conversation go? Is there a systematic way that that conversation always or almost always goes?
Once the person's here?
Yeah, the person is in your office.
Yeah, no, I got it. We have a sales agenda that, you know, one of my assistants does a piece of it, and then, you know, I usually do a piece of it.
All right, take me through it.
The five bullet points without looking at it are, you know, sort of, you know, step one being, you know, just, hey, little client rapport, do some, talk about the preparation we've done for the meeting, talk about our team a little bit. Step two, this is usually a non-attorney doing it, you know, basically fact exploration, you know, kind of get that stuff out of the way before an attorney's meeting with the person. Step three, you know, future orientation, you know, what's kind of the future picture you want to, you client want to have, you know, created or, you know, get to, you know, with our help kind of thing. And then step four being, just sort of a story piece, you know, hey, here's what we did with another client that was in this situation. You know, once they hired us, here's what happened. And then, I guess step five being, you know, here's our solution applied to your situation and, you know, just sort of a close piece of step six.
All right. Two of your five steps are not bad, and two of your five steps are bad, and one of your five steps is bordering on dangerous.
Okay.
The two parts of your system that are not bad are the parts that actually help the client articulate and get clarity about where they are. Where are they today in terms of their time, their money, their reputation? You know, where are they right now in their life? And the other part of your system that's not bad is the part where you talk about where you help them future vision. You know, what are you here to try to accomplish? What does this better life look like? All right?
Okay.
The part that is pretty bad is the part where you talk about, you know, your firm and your credentials and all that kind of stuff in the beginning. And the other part that's pretty bad is where you talk about all the different stuff you've done to help other clients who are similarly situated. Because the client, for the most part, doesn't care about any of that because they're there for their own problem and their own reason because their number one concern is their life, not anyone else's. And then the part that's bordering on dangerous is the part where you have a non-attorney talking about this is what we think we can do for you. Because if you're not careful, that could easily slip into the unlicensed practice of law. And I'd much rather see you following a very, very different system, which as a member of the digital program, you actually have access to recordings where we teach a much, much more effective system, which is much more professional, much more profitable, much more comfortable, does not expose you to nearly as much risk as yours does. And, you know, many, many, many of our members, I don't know if hundreds of our members, but it seems like it, are, you know, have non-attorney salespeople who are executing this very, very effectively. We actually have a sales workshop coming up on January, February, March, April, May, June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. We have a sales competency workshop, which, you know, if you're interested, you can come to. And
okay.
We also have another workshop on January, February, March, April 28th, 29th, and 30th, where we actually have a couple of dozen of our members who are bringing their non-attorney salespeople, and we're training the non-attorney salespeople how to sell legal services very effectively. And, you know, anyone who's a member of Digital, you can get a ticket to those at member prices. You know, the same, everything comes with 100% money back guarantee also, so you got no financial risk. And all you got to do is to claim the guarantee is, you know, before the workshop is over. Don't wait till it's over and go home and then bitch and complain that you didn't get your money's worth. You know, while the workshop is still going on, if you don't feel like you're getting your money's worth, you let us know. And if we can't make you happy, then, you know, we'll give you a refund. So you got no financial risk there. And like I said, as a member of the digital, you can get it, you can get a spot at the same price that, that regular members can get. If you were not a member of digital, it would be at least 20-25% higher.
Okay.
Is that something you think would benefit you?
Yeah, I do. I mean, honestly, we've started using, non-attorney more based on just, some of your previous coaching, but I guess we're not quite implementing it to the ideal yet.
What is your average case or matter potentially worth for you?
Our average in 2018 was $5,500.
$5,500?
Yes.
All right. And what is your current conversion rate?
I don't think I have my annual memorized. Just looking at February, we've converted four out of 17.
Four out of 17. That's not good. Four divided by 17. You know that's not good, right?
Yeah.
It's like 20%. Okay. So if you could convert, if you could increase that from 20% even to just 30%, you know, not a huge increase in terms of the numbers, but that would be, that'll be two extra clients a month. That'd be an extra $11,000 a month. That'll be an extra $125,000-$130,000 a year in revenue. What would that potentially do for your business and your life?
There's definitely a, speaking of some of that goal and, lifestyle stuff, it's definitely a home we're looking at, to get to that, I'm very focused on getting to. It would help me get there. It would help me in the business sense, get myself out of the work production, a lot more by bringing in another work production person. Because, I feel like my hands are a little bit too much in work production, even though I'm, the owner of the firm.
The house you're looking to buy, how much is that house?
$350,000.
Okay, and the house you're in now, how much equity do you have?
$40,000.
40, 50, 60, 70. So you need around $35,000. You need around $35,000 or $40,000 to make the gap between the equity you take out of your current house and the down payment on the $350,000 house. Is that about right?
Yes.
All right. And then what are your current payments on your house?
$1,300.
Okay, so your rent your payments are going to go from $1,300 to about $2,600.
Mhm.
Is that about what you figured?
Yes.
So you need $40,000 for the down payment. You need an extra $1,300 a month for the monthly carrying costs for the new house. How do you feel being in the house you're in now as compared to the house you want to be in? You'll notice, by the way, I'm doing exactly what I teach you to do. I'm doing this in slow motion, so there's no tricks. You don't feel like you're being manipulated. I'm literally demonstrating by walking you through these questions how the process works.
I don't like the environment we're in. I was listening to one of the mindset pieces in your app and really was trying to get much more future focused. And I think one of your, things in there was talking about your progression of housing and really kind of getting that vision out there for myself to really have that goal out there that I'm excited and motivated about. So I'm, my wife and I are out of this, two bedroom condo on an alley, and, the place we want to move to is basically on the beach over, in the Indiana Dunes, on Lake Michigan.
So how do you feel every day when you wake up in a two-bedroom condo in the alley?
A little depressed.
You're still there.
Pardon?
I said, it's obviously not that bad since you're still there. If it was really horrible, you wouldn't be living there. So it's not
right.
like you're living in, like, the worst thing ever. But how do you feel?
No.
I mean, really, honestly, dig deep, be honest. How do you feel living in – no one knows your name. I don't even remember what you said your first name was. All we know is you live in Chicago in a two-bedroom condo on an alley.
Yeah.
Oh, you said your name is Peter. I remember that.
Yeah. I just feel I mean, just a little sad that we haven't kind of upgraded, you know, because we've been in the same place for, you know, 13, 14 years now.
Now, that's interesting. You use the word sad. You know, I've had this conversation with, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands of lawyers about where they are now versus where they want to be. And sad is an interesting word. What about it makes you sad? Why do you say sad? Some people say frustrated. Some say disappointed. Some people say embarrassed. Some people say angry. Sad is not a word I hear very often when it comes to where they live.
Well, I'd like to be providing a better life for my wife, you know. And, you know, when I just say, you know, when I kind of say, boy, when I'm looking back, let's just look current situation. I'd like to provide a better life for her and I, you know, where she's not waking up in a, you know, in a dark, you know, place on an alley, but rather, you know, just a place that, you know, because, I mean, quite honestly, even just like nuanced individual stuff, like she's affected by, you know, like darkness, like, you know, when it's too dark, you know, there are people who are kind of have that seasonal affective disorder, and she's got some of that, and it's like, you know, the idea of just having even an east-facing window, you know, facing out over Lake Michigan versus an alley, you know, would upgrade our lives just based on that simple fact alone. And I'm disappointed in myself that I haven't been, you know, I have not made that happen to date.
Why are you disappointed in yourself?
I mean, I know I'm capable of running a bigger and better and grander law firm than I've been doing the last half dozen years.
So if you believe that you're capable of it and you seem to have a desire to have the benefits of doing so, why haven't you been able to run a bigger and better and grander law firm?
You know,
if you take a guess, what are you guessing might be the reason?
When I look at some of our, you know, things that I think has held back our income in recent years, it's maybe underpricing our services at times, and really until you know, I signed up for the all digital coaching program, I don't know, September, October or whatever. I feel like that's helped me, some of your resources on the app and just the coaching calls and stuff, just really understanding, getting a better understanding, obviously based on my question, you know, are hearing it's not quite there, but, you know, just really being much more aggressive on the sales and marketing piece, and, you know, that whole sales flow I know needs to be a lot better.
Why do you think you are where you are now instead of where you want to be? I mean, you seem like a pretty thoughtful, self-aware kind of person.
Yeah. I think I have been challenged, I think, to get past sort of a little bit of a, I would just call it a little bit of a scarcity mindset, sort of a undervaluing our legal services vis-a-vis the, you know, the quality that we actually bring to the table, myself and, you know, our team and stuff like that.
So do you think that the big challenge that you've got that got you living in a two-bedroom condo on an alley without an east-facing window that you don't like being in, do you think the challenge that has you living someplace that causes you to wake up feeling sad, do you think the challenge that has you feeling like you wish you could provide a better life for your wife? These are all your words, not mine, right?
Absolutely.
That prevent you from being able to build a bigger, better, grander law firm. Do you think it has mostly to do with your mindset, or do you think it has more to do with just not having the technical skills on how to run a profitable law firm, or do you think it might be something else?
No, I don't think it's something else. I think it's probably mindset first, and I mean, you know, the other stuff, yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you looked at, you know, how we're doing everything and just different processes, you know, there are definitely some upgrades, but, well, you know, when I look in the rearview mirror, I just think back to times or, you know, it's like, when I'm looking at stuff to correct myself and kind of get some big goals in front of me at the start of this year that we made and, you know, some of these things like, you know, picking out a house we want to be in, I've been trying to really get out of that, you know, basically create a future vision and a picture and kind of like, you know, have this future that, you know, kind of living as if I'm going to be in that in the future rather than kind of mired in, you know, in some of this past junk. Cause yeah, I think it's mostly mindset kind of stuff that I'm trying to still overcome. And, I mean, I think in a lot of ways technical or just the how to is almost the easier part versus the, you know, really kind of the worldview mindset. Sometimes that's tough stuff to change. Whereas, you know, I mean, I could look at some of, you know, the how to manage stuff or, you know, other products where it's like, you know, how to do your books, how to do different things. Whereas, you know, the kind of getting your mind right, I think, you know, that to me, I think has been more challenging for me.
All right. So now we're going to shift gears in this conversation. Because so far we've been understanding all about where you're at and why you're there and why you think you're there and how you feel about being there. And notice I haven't said a whole bunch of stuff about myself yet.
Okay.
So now we're shifting gears to talking about, can you imagine what it would be like to be living in that $350,000 house? Being able to provide a better life for your wife. Being able to give her a bedroom with an east-facing window with sunlight, being able to build a bigger, better, grander law firm that's priced appropriately where you could start to get out of your scarcity mindset. Can you actually bring yourself to believe that that's possible for yourself?
Yes. Yes, I can.
How do you imagine it would feel like if you could wake up in that house 24 months from now?
I mean, I think it would have, you know, just, I mean, I think sort of my whole, what, you know, daily countenance would be just, you know, just a lot better, you know, right? Not to use just simple emotive words, but, you know, just more of a happy, joyous life versus a little bit more of a dreaded, oh, crap, I'm around these, you know, these people in our building who, you know, I mean, I don't mean this sounds bad, but, you know, it's like, you know, this isn't the environment and the sorts of people we should be living around as, you know, a successful law firm owner, and yet I've allowed myself to kind of stay in it versus, you know, it would be great to walk out onto the beach and, I think it would uplift just so many parts of life, right? I don't know, I think it would be kind of like, you know, just being like healthier, you know, like stuff like that. It's like there are parts of life that just help all of your areas, you know, like if I'm healthier fitness-wise, it helps every part of my life. You know, if I'm living in that better environment, I would guess that would be very similar. It helps all areas of my life.
Okay, so where you are today is you've been running your law firm for more than 10 years, and where it's gotten you is living in a two-bedroom condo on an alley with no east-facing window for your wife. Had you feeling
correct.
Sad? Had you feeling a sense of dread, it sounds like, being around people who are your neighbors? Sad about living that way? It sounds like you recognize that being in the environment you're in is contributing to your scarcity mindset, because after all, you're around a bunch of people who are broke. And you believe that it is possible with, it sounds like, the right help to be living in a $350,000 house with an east-facing window where you can go out to the beach, where you can feel daily happy, joyous life with a bigger, better, grander law firm, not feel sad. I feel proud of yourself. I'm using the word proud of yourself, and I imagine that's probably accurate for being able to give your wife a better life. That's about the long and the short of it?
Yes.
Okay. So how motivated are you to go from where you are now to where you say you want to be? Let's just say on a scale of 1 to 10.
Ten.
Okay. So write down my email address.
Okay.
And as soon as we are done with the call, send me an email with your phone number. I'm going to call you right back, and I'm going to get you signed up to come to our Discovery Day. Comes with a 100% money-back guarantee on the setup fee. So basically, the Discovery Day is free. There's no cost to come to this. There's no charge to come to the Discovery Day, but we do require a $1,000 deposit, which will be applied as your setup fee when you get through the Discovery Day. Listen to how the entire program works from top to bottom. So we're going to lay out the whole thing from you top to bottom. You'll meet dozens of members of my team. You'll meet hundreds of our members from around the country, many of whom will tell you that they felt very similar to the way you feel now and how their life is better now.
Okay.
You and your wife can come and ask a million questions and conduct real due diligence. I mean, really, really, really dig in and conduct your due diligence. Ask all the questions you want. And at the end of that whole Discovery Day, if at the end of it you say, no, this is not for me, I want to go back to my two-bedroom condo on the alley with no east-facing window, you know, you go to the back of the room, you say, I don't want to do this, and you turn in your badge, and we will refund you the setup fee, because obviously we don't need it since you're not engaging our services. On the other hand, if you're like most people who come to the Discovery Day and you say, holy crap, this is amazing, and you see all of the success stories and it all makes sense to you, there's no rocket science. It's very simple what we do for people. It's very mm-hmm. basic stuff. We work on mindset. We work on each of the seven main parts of your law firm. We provide an outside CEO and walk you through a very systematic, proven approach that we use. You get to the end of the Discovery Day and you feel confident that this is the right decision for you. Then you engage our services. You and your wife stick around for the live quarterly meeting, which will take place on that Saturday and Sunday. And then you'll be assigned to a crash course group, and you and your crash course group will spend every week for the next 12 weeks going step by step by step by step, building a better law firm. And most people just completely transform their law firms and their lives, even just in the first 90 days. And, you know, what happens after that and after that and after that, and why it works and how it works and what we do and where we do it, how we do it, and all that kind of stuff is really why we have the Discovery Day. To come to the Discovery Day, like I said, costs nothing. We just require a deposit for the setup fee, which is 100% refundable. And just to make this really, really simple for you and really, really simple for me and my team, in the event that you come to the Discovery Day and decide this is not the right thing for you, not only will we, of course, refund your setup fee, but we'll even come out of pocket for up to $500 to reimburse you and your wife for travel expenses, just to make this a really simple decision for you. You understand
okay.
why we do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because anyone who has a problem making a decision to come with 100% money-back guarantee and we even come out of pocket for travel expenses is basically telling me they're not going to be prepared to do the work that you got to do to transform your law firm.
Okay.
But that doesn't sound like you, does it?
No, I'm ready to take things to a different level. I'm tired of where we're at right now.
Okay. So my email is rjon.
Okay.
rjon at howtomanage.com. Rjon at howtomanage.com. Just send me an email with your name and phone number, and I'll call you back as soon as we're done with the call here. And, you know, I want everyone to recognize, and don't say your last name, because so far the only thing people know is your name is Peter. You're a lawyer in Chicago. I mean, there's a million Peters in Chicago, and probably thousands of them are lawyers. So you're basically anonymous at this point. But I want you to recognize, is this or is not this not exactly what I teach in the program on how to sell?
It's exactly,
right? I mean, we didn't ask, is this still a good time to speak? And I didn't confirm, you know, I didn't assure you that everything would be kept confidential because obviously we're on a phone call. I asked you to keep your name private. But, you know, we went through where you are now in terms of your time and your money, in terms of your money, your time, your money, and your reputation. You know, I didn't ask it to you that explicitly, but I covered all those points, didn't I?
Right. Yes.
And I asked you, you know, we went over why you think you are where you are today. And, you know, you shared with me a little bit about your mindset. You shared with me a little bit about with your environment, with your neighbors and all that kind of stuff. And then I asked you where you want to be. And you described for me where you want to be. And I just kept repeating your own story back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've had people, when I've had these conversations with them, I've had people literally say to me, I am so angry with you right now, but I have to admit, all you're doing is repeating my own words back to me. So I guess I'm really just angry with myself, and I should probably do something about it. Your words are much more powerful to you than my words. Like, I would have never in a million years chosen the word sad or countenance or happy, joyous life. That's just not my vocabulary. But that's your vocabulary, which is why it's so much more effective when I use your vocabulary back to you.
Right. Yep.
And this is why when lawyers spend all this time on sales calls, or their staff spends all this time on sales calls with prospective new clients talking about the firm and our credentials and our success stories and our history and where we went to law school and blah, 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 it just bounces off the person, the other person. They don't care. But when you take the time to understand where the person is and then repeat their own story back to them, I mean, they can't get enough.
Right.
So I hope that was a valuable lesson for everyone, and I hope you do send me that email.
Great. Thank you for the answer.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Stop.
And, Arjun, we do not have any more questions at this time. So,
well,
we
good,
are good.
I'm out of time.
I know. So I want to thank you for your time, and thank you for sharing with us. And also, you know, like I mentioned before, when Peter asked his question, it's a great opportunity to learn from other people's questions. The process that Arjun, that you just heard Arjun go through with Peter, is the exact same sales process you can be having in your law firm. So, Arjun, thank you, and we look forward to our next call. I want to thank our operator, Stephanie, for handling everything in the background there and with the recording and the queue and everything, and I'll get the recording posted in your membership site as soon as possible. And, Arjun, have a great rest of the day, man.
Thanks, Scott, and thank you, Peter. I'll look forward to receiving your email. And everyone, I'll see you on the discussion forum.
All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect the line at this time.